Oh, hi there.
Oh, why? Hello.
As you may have noticed, that the voice across the table from me is not Kate. Secretary DeBral is here, and they've been on the podcast before, years ago, what feels like now. I can't even remember how long ago that was.
Yeah, neither can I.
But as we talked about a little bit in the last podcast with Kate, we're going to be circling in some other folks just because Kate and I schedules are both pretty difficult to maneuver, and also just feeling like there's got to be some happy medium between Kate and I just like, you know, diving in the way that we do, and me attempting to interview folks, which is a skill that I really don't have very well. So, you know, the point of this podcast is to really capture conversations. And if I'm talking to someone who I don't really know very well and I don't know their practice very well, it's actually really hard to get the sort of style and the substance that I think we're looking for, especially because whenever it's an interview, people so quickly like fall into their like shtick. It's like they're trying to sell their latest online course. But I know some of you might not have listened to the initial podcast that Circuit and I did together, so I'm gonna let them do a mildly formal introduction to whatever degree of formality they want to do it.
Let's see what comes up. Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for having me, first of all. That felt kind of formal, but I appreciate it. It's true. I was here once before. We were actually in my living room before when we recorded. I remember that.
Yeah.
And as you said, my name is Sukriti DeBral, and today we're sitting in Bow Street Yoga.
Yes, indeed.
Am I allowed to say that?
Yes, you are. No one can know where we are. We're in a secret underground bunker that no one will ever know the location of.
Oh, there are people listening. I should think about privacy. But, like, I don't know, my brain just... Full disclosure, I got, like, 4 hours of sleep.
Okay.
There's a whole story behind that. Maybe we can get into it later. But, so we're in Bow Street Yoga, and I've been practicing at this studio since 2010, and actually that's when I started my postural practice of any kind, was in this studio, and then I have stuck around because it's been a thing, it's been a good thing in my life, and I appreciate that, like, you and I are friends.
Yes.
And we are friends, we are practice friends, and like, I feel like this is a place where when we talk, it's like a continuation of other conversations we're always having.
Yeah.
Which I appreciate because I feel like I don't have to be on as much or something.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we don't need to be on for this podcast. It's like a recurring theme of this podcast that burnout is high and and sleepiness is present. Thus is the life of a modern yoga teacher.
Yes, thus it is. Oh, on that note, I also teach sexuality education. I teach sexuality education is actually incorrect phrasing, but whatever. I teach on topics in sexuality to middle schoolers and high schoolers. It's the other thing I do. For money, for cash money, and also for my passion. It's super fun, and in a lot of ways, I use yoga. It's like I'm teaching yoga sometimes while I'm... I know you hate it when people are like, oh, this is the yoga of this. This is the yoga of that. I do the yoga of sex ed.
No, I think it's different because you're not doing yoga for sex ed.
Although my supervisor... We're having a conference soon, and my supervisor was like, you should totally do a yoga for sex educators workshop. And I was just like, you mean like a yoga for human beings who are in the world workshop? And they were like, yeah, but we'll just call it yoga for sex educators because we're at the conference. And I'm like, okay, whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, that's the basics.
That's the basics.
What I do in the world.
So, we're going to talk about some things. I don't know where you want to start, Sukriti. We've got it, as we Kate and I used to do, we have a whiteboard with things that we may or may not talk about. It's just good to have some structure that you can then, throw miles out the window.
Yeah. I think we should start with paddle tennis.
Yes. We're wondering, what is paddle tennis? If anybody knows, please call in. We have no way for you to call
in. This phrase entered the room somehow earlier when we were planning our little whiteboard. I have no clue what it is.
I have no clue what it is.
I hope it's a thing.
I think it is a thing.
You do.
I think it is a
thing.
Well,
you have a sibling who plays a paddle sport.
Yes.
Right? Is it a racket?
A racket sport. I think he could be mildly offended that...
I'm sorry. I apologize for my lack of knowledge in paddle/racket sports.
Yes. So, yes, if anyone is big into paddle tennis and knows about the yoga of paddle tennis, please send us an email and we will read it. Perhaps like a haiku or something like that. Something in poetic form that Kate can dramatically read on the next podcast.
Can I just shout out to Kate Robinson and how much I love listening to her on this podcast? And her singing especially.
Yes. She should really record an album at some point.
Kate, we should talk. I actually have, it's not name brand Invisalign, but it is a knockoff version of Invisalign. You were singing about Invisalign in your last episode that I listened to, and so I just wanted to put that out there.
Yes.
Okay.
There's going to be a whole musical extravaganza just all about Invisalign. We'll probably have to call it something else to avoid copyright infringement.
Probably. I imagine you will. I imagine Kate's already 10 steps ahead on this, though.
Yes,
I think
10
knows.
Steps ahead.
Yeah.
She doesn't even know she's 10 steps ahead, but she's...
Another thing I appreciate about Kate Robinson on the podcast recently is that she's been talking about life being on fire. I've heard that phrase once or twice, and it's just really resonated with me, Ryan.
Okay.
In certain ways. So yeah. I'm experiencing a big... And this is on the whiteboard, folks, so this is like smooth segue right
yes.
now. I'm in the middle of kind of a big life transition. I had a relationship that was many years long, and then it's no longer happening now in the way that it was. And when you asked what I wanted to talk about, I was like, well, this is like a very present thing happening. Mm-hmm. And in terms of practice, I think this is going to sound maybe kind of cliche at first, where it's like, oh, I'm so thankful for my yoga practice right now. God, if I didn't do yoga, I'd be like in a ditch somewhere. I don't know how I'd be living. No,
it's
not quite like that, but it's, I feel like a realization I've had recently about how my practice is supportive to me is sort of like my ability to be more flexible with my emotions, I guess. You're looking at me like, I don't know what that means. And that makes sense because
No, I think I know what it, I think I just want to hear more.
Yeah, okay. For all of you astrology nerds out there, because we have to talk about astrology if this is a yoga podcast, obviously.
Precisely, always.
Please note my sarcasm. So, I'm a what they call a fixed sign, and I've resonated with this concept only because it just means you're stubborn AF, basically.
Yeah.
And I'm somebody who kind of am like, oh, look, that state of being over there, that's where I would like to be. And I'm just going to make myself be that way, right? And my MO before yoga practice was just like, fake it till you make it, just pretend that you're already through and suppress the feelings and just like kind of squeeze them over there.
Yeah.
Or whatever. And I think a better way of putting it than maybe flexibility with my emotions, although I think that has some interesting meaning in it, is like patience with mm-hmm. them. And tolerance for them that I didn't grow up learning how to do.
Sure. Yeah.
Right? And obviously I'm talking about the hard emotions. I'm not talking about like rolling on the floor laughing.
Sure.
Hashtag raffle. We can do that all day long.
Yeah.
So I've been feeling like I've had the new layer of awareness of like, oh, the reason I'm being able to move through this particular difficulty the way that I am right now, it kind of surprises me. It's like, uh-huh. Oh, I feel like I should be falling apart more.
Yeah.
And I'm not. And so I'm kind of like realizing, yeah, oh, the practicing pays off. You know?
Yeah.
Like there's a reservoir, there's like a buildup of habits, of skills that show up when I want them to now, and it's cool.
Do you find some of that is just the ability to like, there's like enough space to be like, oh, this is happening right now.
That's really it. That's the main one.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the main one of like, ugh. And then mm-hmm. like, oh, I'm realizing that not like, okay, I'm going to go and like reactively do something immediately.
Yeah.
I might still do that thing, but there's space in between.
No, I've been, I definitely feel like that space, maybe space isn't the right word, but it's the only thing that's coming to mind right now. Only like ripens over time. Cause it's like, I like that you were like, ew. Because if I am too quick to like label, mm-hmm. then it gets like, it gets squirrely. Cause it's just like, this is happening right now. And I'm, you know, it, sometimes it's like, well, I can't really stop it from happening, but I can at least be like, oh, here we go.
Yeah.
And I sort of fell into that yesterday a little bit. It was like it was actually precipitated a little bit by a conversation with Fez in which I had one of those moments where I, typed something that was like a more accurate description of my feelings than I necessarily like meant to articulate, and then was like, oh shit, now I have to deal with this.
Oh no.
And then just felt like, just like this sort of like take over for the rest of the day. But it was like really interesting because I was just like, there is absolutely no reason to fight this. Like, I have nothing to do. Like, I'm just going to kind of let this go. And, you know, thank God there was a new episode of Great British Baking Show to watch.
Wait, what?
Yes.
We will revisit this topic.
At a later date.
At a later date. I did not know.
Okay, yeah. Started on Friday.
But so what I'm hearing you say is you have, and I resonate with this, it's like the acknowledgement that you're having a sensory experience.
Yeah.
Which is emotional, but like not, you know, it's not necessary. In fact, part of the reactivity for me is labeling it, right? Like if I label it right away, that's in a way a reaction because I'm trying to control it. I'm trying to understand it, right? And by labeling it, I mean, oh my God, whoa. That's what we do with people, right? Like with people, we when from the outside, we label someone, we're boxing them in. And it's the same thing when I'm having an emotion. And you just said when you texted to Fez after it had happened and you felt it really was a true description, then it was like, okay, now I have to face this, which is the usefulness of labels. Yeah.
Precisely, when I actually, like, put it down in words and then was like, you know, because usually that happens verbally, like...
But you looked at it in your
looked
hand.
At it in my hand and was like, fuck! That is a true statement, and I didn't really want to deal with that statement right now, but there it is.
Well... Since you chose Fez to share that with, I hope you at least got a really good GIF response out of it.
Yes, no, he actually called right away, and then like, sort of like, acknowledged that was a big thing to type.
Yeah.
So, but you know, even in that, like, if I were to rewind the tape, like, before I use the sort of garbled junk of sounds that I made to describe the
experience.
Sort of, the experience, the first thing that came to my mind was to use the word depression. And I don't think that that is, like, an inaccurate description, but I think too often, especially the words that have been, like, really clinical, the words that we use to describe emotion that also have a clinical
mm-hmm.
meaning, it's, like, really useful to try and, like, separate
mm-hmm.
that a little bit. Because your experience of that word and my experience mm-hmm. of that word are different, and then, like, my experience of it yesterday versus my experience of mm-hmm. it 3 days down the line, sure, there might be some similar patterns, but the experience of it yeah. is at least different based on the circumstances of
yes.
what is going on, even though there might be a pattern that is worth
yes.
acknowledging in myself.
Listening to you say that, I got this image.
Uh-huh.
Just go with me for a second.
Okay.
Of, like, if you've ever seen people make, like, pasta where it involves pulling a long piece or a small piece off of a larger piece and pinching it off.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah.
You
know?
I almost feel like depression could be, like, the dough.
Okay.
Like, the whole thing. Okay. We'll see if this works. and then, like, these moments of experience, it's like a piece of it's been pinched off and like, and it's discrete. It's like a separate
yeah.
experience. It's like one little one. It's still kind of made of the same stuff of
yeah.
the bigger thing, but there's in the labeling of it in that moment, in the separating it out, there's maybe something useful to know about that moment or that day
yes.
or right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm having a spacey brain moment.
That's fine.
Did that make sense?
That's why this is called Enrolled.
Oh my God, I'm feeling safer. but like, yeah, and that in the pinching off of something, right? And now this is reminding me of when we were having dinner with Fez and he was talking about the blanket from I Heart Huckabees. Right? That there's the
oh,
whole
yeah.
there's the whole blanket, and then like here's this, here's a tree, here's an orgasm,
yeah.
here's a what, and here's a
yeah.
blah, blah. And it's sort of, I'm having that kind of a feeling right now of like, oh, you know, there's like experience, big E experience happening, which is like all the layers together, and then as we try to understand pieces,
yeah.
like pinching off or focusing on spotlighting. Right?
Yeah.
Anyway. cool. I'm
but
not high
all,
right now, I promise.
But this all stemmed from a conversation about relationship ending and
yes.
transformation
Thank
and
you.
Transition. And
thank you for bringing that.
That's why we have a whiteboard.
There it is. You know, in grad school, they taught me not to say whiteboard.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, they were like,
a dry erase
certain
board.
Words can, you know, like white and black and
yeah.
and whatever. So, yeah, dry erase board and chalkboard instead of blackboard. Not that anyone uses those anymore.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah, so the other word next to transition is transformation. And I feel like in tandem with this sort of awareness of, oh, I'm managing this transition way better than I would have thought that I would have, if, you know, if you'd asked me like 6 months ago or something. There's also a feeling of like rapid change happening, like
yeah.
internally for me. And I think this is a function of certain personalities too, maybe, but I feel like rapid change is a thing. Like it happens rapidly for me. Like, I have periods of time where I'm very steady and things are kind of how they are. And then there'll be a period of time where I'm just like everything, all the pieces are coming
yeah.
apart and then coming back together in another way, or we're adding some new pieces or we're whatever. So I feel like I'm in that. And I feel really lucky also to have support in that, because I think that it would be really tough to try and figure all this out without like elders in my life who,
sure.
you
yeah.
know, like that feels important, and friends,
yeah.
In addition to practice. And so the transformation piece of it, you know, partially has to do with over the last couple of years, I've sort of and we've talked about this a lot.
Yeah.
Building a new relationship with the word queer,
mm-hmm.
With the concept of sexual orientation and gender. I mean, these are things that I teach about in a basic sort of way, but I experience them in a much more complicated way than I talk about them in a classroom.
Yeah.
And I say that to the students too, right? Like that there's, yes, these are the words, this is what they mean in general, or what they can mean, but especially through practice, experiencing myself as a human, and I'm sure you have a lot to say about this, right? Also, I feel more and more like practice is a refuge because I don't experience my gender. I don't experience my sexual orientation. Things like that just aren't as loud when I'm practicing, right? Like, they exist. Like, surely it would be unrealistic or inaccurate to say they don't exist, but I don't experience them.
To me, it goes back and forth between an experience of not experiencing, well, like I could describe it rather as not experiencing gender or sexual orientation, but then I often wonder if it's actually more accurate to say that my experience of my gender, my experience of my sexuality is not being mitigated through other people's perceptions of myself because I'm fundamentally sitting there by myself or in triangle pose by myself. And that is both, as you said, like a refuge. Like that, like when that's spiraling through your mind all day long, like I even had a moment before I came down and I was like, oh my God, I've got all of this like gross facial hair. Like I've got it. And then I was like, it's super deep.
Everyone's
like,
going to see it, Ryan.
Like it's
on the podcast.
On the podcast. That was not the thing that actually went through my head. It was like, Circuit Deep does not care. But like I had that, there was that like, that voice. One of the things that I really appreciate practice as I sort of consider, you know, what gender and sexuality actually means to me or how it's evolving in me or like whatever words you want to use to describe it is that, at least when I am settled into practice that, it's less being mitigated through the lens of culture.
Right, less.
Yeah. I mean, it still is, because...
Well, your mind has been formed.
Yes, exactly, but it's less so.
Yeah, yeah.
It's less so. And, which is also funny, because I also feel like practice was the thing that led me down the road of questioning that.
Mm-hmm.
So there are moments where I'm like... Fuck you! I could have just been like...
Oh. You took the blue pill, Ryan.
Could have just been like an ignorant like gay boy and like lived a mildly modest existence.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did yoga. That is not exactly how that works. I'm just being funny at this point.
I mean, it's not exactly, and it's kind of, kind of, I mean, you know, in so many words. And now thinking of, I had this thought watching Westworld.
Have you seen
this show?
I have not made it through the second season, but I watched the first and like half the second.
I always feel like I risk sounding like some kind of arrogant when I say this because it makes me sound like I think, but then that's human nature to think that we're like three steps ahead of where we really are. The thing where some of them... Okay, spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert.
I guess, but it's been a while, so I'm just going to go out on a limb here for a sec. Some of them have more awareness of what's happening, right?
Yes.
Of, like, the situation that they're in. Some of them have more awareness of that than others. And the others are pretty blissfully just, like, playing out their scripts, right? And living their lives. And I feel like that's what you just reminded me of. Of, like, I could have just been What's the James Marsden character?
Oh, shit.
I don't remember his
name. The James Marsden character.
The James Marsden character who's just like, I'm a cowboy.
Yeah.
And like, I'm living my cowboy life. And then what's her face comes along and is like, hello, wake up. No, that's not what's happening.
Yeah, precisely.
So anyway, I feel like yoga, if...
Can.
Yeah, if practiced, you know, with the intention to you know, where it's about seeking calm and clarity and...
Yeah.
Yeah, you can do that.
Yeah. Mm. And then you start to see things.
Yeah. Everywhere.
Oh. Shit.
Do you ever feel, I guess it depends on who we're around, but sometimes I feel, like, kind of lonely in it.
I feel very lonely.
You know? I guess we've talked about this. Faz talks about this, right? Yeah. About, like, the aloneness of that experience, in a way. So, I feel less alone right now, thanks.
Okay. Well, there is a loneliness in it. And then what's funny to me is that now that yoga is more prevalent, let's say, or at least the, like, external trappings of yoga are more prevalent, like, sometimes I'll have conversations with folks, even other, like, yoga teachers, where I'll be like, the loneliness is only, like, amplified, because I'm just like, we're not talking about the same thing.
No.
Like, we are decidedly not talking about the same thing. Mm-hmm. And it's not even that, like, I fully, like, I had a good long moment of very, like, athletic, superficial practice that was really empowering, especially because it came after a long period of injury. So, like, that year and 6 months where I was like, I can do side crow. What the fuck? I couldn't put any weight on my arms when I was 19. And now I can, like, there was something really, like, empowering about that. And then, you know, injured myself in another way doing all of that.
Doing side crow.
Doing side crow. And like, it was actually more of the, there was this period of time, where things were still very Anna Forrest, inspired, where there was the, what did she call it? Oh, the quote, I'm using giant air quotes. Gravity surfing.
Gravity surfing.
Do you remember this experience?
I did not. It's possible we were in the same room once, practicing with Anna Forrest.
It's possible.
Big ballroom in that hotel.
Yeah. But the, like doing Ashtavakasana and then taking the bottom leg back and going into Koindinyasana.
Oh,
and
right.
And, you know, switching legs and going to,
and there's,
like,
cosmic lightning bolts traveling through your body,
yes,
and
it was more that stuff that started to, like, wear and tear, the fact that I had just decided that backbending wasn't a thing that I needed to do ever.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Knowing your practice now, I'm
yes,
like, really.
I know it's kind of strange to think about it, because now that's, like, all I do.
Hashtag besties, backbends.
But anyways, I don't know where I was going with this. But anyways, so the sometimes the when I'm having conversations just sort of socially with other yoga teachers, it's just like, oh, you know, yes, we get on a yoga mat and, like, the shapes might look vaguely, but, like, we're not actually talking about the same thing. And like, sometimes I have that with people who are, like, very, very, like, have been practicing for a really long time, but it usually when it's with someone who's been practicing for a long time, it's just that the expression of practice looks different, but there is some connection in the
approach,
or framing, even just the purpose of practice, even if the external manifestation of that looks like
super different.
Super different.
Yeah.
So it can feel lonely, and then there's some connection which I haven't exactly worked out from the, like, there's like the feeling lonely in it, and then like also really enjoying the being alone in it. Something that I have to recognize too. And then sometimes even, you know, whether it's like getting in front of the classroom or whether it's just like being social in a more like social, not work type of way.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes there's a like, just, this may sound like hyperbolic, but fear.
Mm-hmm. No, it doesn't.
That's the word that's coming to mind. And then I often wonder is like, well, if my yoga practice is like not also addressing that, like, what the fuck's that?
Right.
I haven't quite figured out how to work with that.
This is the struggle of being the Cylon with more awareness. Oh, that's a Dim Crossing show. With more awareness. But you get what I'm saying. Like, it's like, I feel that too, that struggle that comes. It's like, if I can't navigate, or if I don't have tools, or if I'm not helping myself to navigate that stuff, then what's the point, right? Like, other than ta-da, tree pose.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
And then I'm also, like, to be perfectly frank, like, there might not be tools and skills that are typically associated with yoga practice that actually address that.
Like you said, with the prevalence, with the type that is prevalent, maybe?
Yeah.
And that, I guess we're spoiled here. Like, because that's not my experience.
Yeah.
Right? Of being taught and also practicing yoga, it has been integrated in with that, right?
Like,
but that's, very lucky, I think. I feel lucky to have had access to teachers and to you know, a community of people who's interested in practicing more holistically like that. And you were talking about, so I brought up loneliness and you said, there's that loneliness. And then there's also the refuge of like, I am alone here. No one can fuck with me.
No one can like sit on me in a pose. No one can turn me into a human pretzel by myself.
Oh my God. The other day, I was subbing a class and a person, I hesitate to say student because I had just met this person, like, my first time being in a room with them. And they were like, could you look at my down dog? And I was like, what would you like me to look for? And they were like, well, I just feel, you know, and then they described their struggles physically with it. And we talked a little bit about the intention, like, what's the point of even doing it? And noting that, like, if you can't square the point of doing it with how it feels to do it, then maybe try a different way of achieving what you're trying to feel, right? But we're in there and we're talking. And it's very clear that my verbal suggestions are only going so far. Yeah. And I don't really touch people anymore. In the very beginning, in the first year or two of teaching, I did. But I realized that I prefer not being touched most of the time, particularly if you just met someone, right?
Yeah.
Right? And so... Anyway, so then I had an urge. I was like, I feel like this person could really benefit from just feeling what it's like to have their hips suspended, you know, or pulled back, and there were no ropes in the room or whatever. So I was like, you know, I had the conversation, and they were like, oh, yeah, go ahead. And so we did it, and their body was just like, shoop, and like, it was like the point of a physical help, right, was achieved, I think. And then they stood up, and they were like, whoa. And, you know, it was this cool moment where I remembered, okay, yeah, I roll my eyes at, like, yeah, I don't want to be sat on or twisted into a pretzel. And then it's like, oh, but this is only possible in a one-on-one setting. Like, I have to have a whole
context. You had had a conversation. You had tried all of your verbal skills. And then, which was very much Barbara's approach. Like, she would talk till she was blue in the face.
Right.
Still kind of does.
Yeah, she
does. Love you, Barbara.
Oh my God, does she listen?
I don't know. I'm sure we'll find out. But then, you know, if someone really wasn't getting it, depending on what it was, she might then go over and offer physical adjustment. Or just sometimes demonstrating was the step.
Yeah, right.
Before physical adjustment.
That's right, yeah.
It's really hard to contextualize the physical adjustment. And I feel like I'm getting a little bit better with it now because I can be a little more efficient with my hands.
With your fancy certificate?
That
was not meant to sound so shady. Oh my God. I was trying to be celebrating.
Yeah. No, but just with like, I just feel like my hands are a little bit, like, they don't need to be quite so forceful to get what I'm wanting.
Yeah, totally.
I have noticed more moments where it felt appropriate to be like, especially because when the intention and purpose of the posture was well established with the group.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, where it would be easier for me to go over and be like, are you having trouble feeling this? Would you like some physical adjustment to help? Like, and then it's not about like correcting the pose. It's just
Can
I give you a hand in feeling something that is admittedly hard to feel?
Yeah. It's freeing, right?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, and I say this in my spiel at the beginning of classes when I don't know people. I'm like, you know what? I'm not actually interested in controlling your body.
Yeah.
I'm not actually, the furthest thing from my desire right now is to tell you what to do with your body. And the irony of being a yoga teacher is that that's what we're doing, right? So it's like to be clear about the intention of, and being clear about, this is how I practice, and this is what's been helpful to me, and here you go. And with this person, with the down dog, as I was doing the physical help, I was talking about how I was like, you know, and my goal here, just to be clear, is to make sure you know that what you're doing is not wrong or bad, right?
Yeah.
The point, again, I just kept directing us at the point of, you know, there are not infinite, but many ways to experience something, right? Having a body. And there's a particular experience I've had in down dog that makes me feel like my spine is able to get longer and there's more space between the joints of my spine when I do it that way. And so I'm offering you a possible road. We won't even know where it goes because maybe for your body it's not going to happen that way for you, right? Towards maybe a similar experience. And as I'm doing it, I'm also saying, by the way, do you feel this? And they're like, whoa, yeah, this is different. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to slowly let go now and just see if you can sustain it. Yeah, exactly. Because the point isn't, this is wrong, I will fix you, right? Which, by the way, I was a glutton for at one point. I wanted that. I just wanted teachers to be like, you're so wrong and bad in so many ways, and here is how to be right. Yeah. You know, and then let me perform that rightness. But this is not therapy, so I will stop there.
I mean, isn't it?
Good point. Fair.
Yeah. But it is hard, like, because I do, and Kate and I have talked about this quite a bit, but there is a, like, I get very wary of not, of, like, basically the pendulum swinging a little too far in the other direction. Because the truth is that...
Just do whatever.
If that's actually... I also feel like that is not from a, like, because you have someone in the room telling you what to do, the do whatever actually can create a lot more...
That's anxiety-inducing.
Like, anxiety, especially if anyone is, like, a really, like, habitually trying to be a good student.
Yes.
Because they're like, well... And then it's just, like, looking around at other people, and it's just really, like... So the skill is actually setting the context.
That's right.
And then with maybe someone who's less familiar with practicing in this way, actually set out some clear choices.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And then when there are people in the room who, like, don't need to hear me talk about 12 actions of the leg because they've heard me say it more times, then I can just be like, legs.
Yes.
Make choices. You know.
That's right.
And it's rare that outside of a one-on-one that I ever get to that extreme. And even within that extreme, then my job is to look around the room and be like, okay, well, what are people missing?
Mm-hmm.
Not because it's wrong that they're missing it.
Right.
But because I like the experience of someone pointing out that your awareness is not here.
Yeah.
And then I can be like, whoa. Oh,
yeah. Cool.
And it's actually really, I find that it's actually really rare that people take that approach.
The approach where you're being intentional,
Especially looking at it from the point of view of, like, not, like, what's wrong with the pose, but, like,
What's possible to feel.
Where is this person's attention?
Mm-hmm.
Where can I, as best I can, perceive this person? And it's actually kind of, you know, I can never tell with absolute certainty.
No
but
way.
Like,
yeah. You can perceive tension in the body.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then be like, okay, well, what about there?
Mm-hmm.
You know, could you drop and lift the left arch a little bit?
Right.
And just see what happens.
Yeah.
And then, and, like, that's not a, like, smacking them on the sacrum and being like, lift your arches!
Oh, my God.
But it's like, huh, what would happen if you...
That's right, yeah. What would it feel like?
Yeah. And that just gets harder and harder and harder the more folks that are in the room.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what it comes down to. People can do it. It's just...
No, it is. I feel harder. That it's hard. Yeah.
Yeah.
So in the basics class on Sunday, what day was that? Was that yesterday?
That was yesterday, yes. That was not even 24 hours ago.
I don't know how it is you pay me to be this case in charge of a room of people. So a friend of mine came, actually, and I don't know, this is a different topic altogether, and we don't have to go into it in detail, but she happened to be a friend, which I think was part of the reason why I ended up acting this way. But there was this moment where I was just like, I used her name, and I was just like, hey, like, you know, let your head go. And it was very, like, and I caught myself, I was like, whoa. And then I said it out loud. I was like, okay, so that sounded kind of harsh. And I'm like, everyone laughed, and I was like, good. And I said, what I meant to say was, to the whole room, you know, what do you perceive in your neck and shoulders? Yeah. And, you know, are you holding your head up off the ground or are you letting it go? And what's the difference between those two experiences for you, right? Because, yeah. And so I find actually that doing that, right, like being a human, making those, I don't even want to say mistakes, but like having those things happen and then out loud, that's my MO right now, is processing them out loud, which I imagine for some people is really annoying. But if you come to my class over and over, I guess you come to expect it, right?
Yeah.
Or to your class or to, yeah.
Yeah.
Where it's like, I made an oops as a teacher. That's not actually how I want to be. And here, let's rewind. Let me give you the alternative that I prefer.
Yeah.
We have strayed very far.
I told you, is you put the things on the whiteboard, and then you potentially ignore some of them.
We could do a really abrupt transition.
I mean, I love abrupt transitions. That is what this show is all about. Which one did you want to jump to?
Well, okay, so before we were talking about, I brought up that experience of gender in practice and how there's, and you said there's nobody mitigating that, or there's fewer voices, there's like the residue of everything that we've learned, but there isn't a present sort of judgment happening of us when we're in practice and who we are. And and I think that because I'm continuously figuring myself out, and I'm kind of just like, what words resonate with me now?
Yeah.
What experiences that other people are describing about their gender resonate with me now? And what does that even mean? And do I even care? Sometimes I swing between these are my pronouns, and this is how you say my name, and da-da-da. And then other times I'm like, whatever, I don't care what you think. Like, you know, and it's just – but anyway, when we're doing this thing, which is you are running a business.
Yeah.
And
somehow
you're doing it, and I applaud you because, it's a space that a lot of people appreciate that you're facilitating. So it's awesome. And it requires, by you and by Kate, Gormley, a lot of work, a lot of social media work, a lot of telling people what we're trying to do, which we can hardly describe with words. So it's like, I know that there have been times where Kate's like, so Kathy, I need a picture of you. Please, like, send me a photo. And I'm like, I don't want to do this. I have like aversion. I'm like resistant immediately. I'm just like, I don't want to put pictures of myself on the internet so that people will come to my class. I just don't like it.
Yeah.
And I'm realizing that part of it is because an image is like static. I mean, or it's like a capture of a specific moment, and I feel like I'm changing all the time, and I'm, you know.
Well, that's very much, I have received multiple emails from different studios that I work for, that's Kelly coming in.
Kelly is coming in.
I'm just going to hit pause on this for a second.
Sure.
Can I do that? I'm going to hit stop. And we're back. Sorry about that, folks. What were we talking about? Oh, social media.
Businesses you work for.
So I've gotten a couple emails this week from a number of different places that I teach, like asking for more like social media stuff. And
Stuff.
And I go back and forth. Like, one reaction I have to that is, like, it's not my fucking job. It's not my job.
It's not.
Which, you know, some people argue, like, well, if you're going to be a modern yoga teacher, you need to, you know, okay, point taken.
Right.
But that's, like, my first reaction is just, like...
Can somebody else do this, please?
Yes. And then my second reaction is really just completely like spiraling into like, okay, so I have all of these yoga photos, which I actually really love the ones that Ben took of me in the studio, my friend Ben Flies just, like, I set up my mat and I started practicing, and he just walked around and took pictures, which was, like, a wonderful, like, the only, like, positive experience of a photo shoot that I've ever had, because I just, like, got to do my practice. And then there were pictures afterwards.
Yeah.
But when I look at those pictures, they feel like very gendered to me.
Mm.
And so I just go through this, like, it's a little bit of the same spiral of, like, whenever I, you know, it's not so much when I'm here at Bow Street, but, like, when I'm teaching at other places, like, I get up in front of the room, like, do I say my pronouns? Do right. I, like,
yeah.
I don't know how to, like,
yeah.
do that.
Maybe we should start every class with, welcome, ladies and gentlemen. No, I hear you. It's tough. Yeah, yeah. It's like, do I share this about myself? Is it important to in this context right
yeah.
now? You know? Yeah. And part of being human is accepting that other people are assessing and judging and
yeah.
automatically, right? We do yeah. it to other people too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And also still really being in this space of, like, it very much feels like when I am in the midst of practicing, that it's like, nope, this is just me. Like, yes, all of these words
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
that I use to describe myself are really helpful. And, like, as much as people will say, like, oh, well, like, the linguistics of it is really hard, I just want to be like, well, if I didn't have a verbal conversation about my experience of my own gender, then I'd have to deal with all day long.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you wearing that?
Right.
Are you a drag queen?
Mm-hmm.
Which, absolutely nothing wrong with drag queens. It's just, like, not my aesthetic. Like, I'm too lazy.
Yes, if there's anything that we know about drag, it's that it's, like, the most elevated, over-the-top,
yeah.
or not over-the-top, but just, like, very, very expressive version
yes.
of oneself. Yeah,
and
you're
and
not
like,
being that. Yeah,
it's just, at some point during the day, I have to roll around on the floor as part of what
yeah.
I do. So, like, there's a limit to the, like, high femme that I can pull off. Where was I? Oh, so, yeah, so if I didn't have a way to say, like, well, this is my experience of gender, these words resonate with me. And it's not even, like, I try never to use the phrase, like, I identify as because
yeah.
it's too fixed. It's,
yep.
You know, if I think back to my, like, 22-year-old self, it wasn't like these experiences were not there. I was just, like, compartmentalizing them in a way that was really unhealthy, but, like, I was just compartmentalizing
yeah.
them. So the idea, or not the idea, but, like, it became very clear that, like, well, I don't actually need to compartmentalize. They can just all, like, just, I can just attempt to be more and more myself in whatever way feels
what?
Comfortable, and safe.
yeah, right.
And, so, anyways, you know, there's also this internal conversation, which I don't know if you have thoughts or experiences like this, but, like, sometimes within the context of yoga practice, I think to myself, well, like, I'm just going to be me. I'm going to wear whatever I want. I'm going to, like, express myself, my gender, however I want to express it. And, like, I don't need to do anything to, like, conform
mm-hmm.
into, like, society standards. And then there's a part of me that, like, is like, well, actually, there might be some things that would be helpful. And wrestling with those two dynamics is really, really hard. because you know, there is like a sort of what's the word I'm looking for? There's a definite like phenomenon of folks, both trans feminine and trans masculine folks, who are like, fuck, we don't need HRT, like,
right.
We don't, like,
yeah,
that's all bullshit, like, we've been over-medicalized, like,
yeah,
and I, there is part of me that is, like, 100% with that,
uh-huh.
And then there's another part of me that is, like, well, yeah, but, like, maybe there's, like, a middle ground between, like,
mm-hmm.
not doing anything, and, like, actually being really clear about, like, these are the things with which I experience dysphoria,
mm-hmm.
and address that,
yeah,
and see if it's helpful, and that's it, right?
Yeah.
And it's really hard to unpair that too from like my general bias, which I, you know, I think is partially a family bias, and I think it's partially a bias that comes a little bit from like yoga and like holistic health circles of like not taking any medicine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I know something about that. Yeah.
And so that's really,
and the concept of like, what does it mean?
Yeah.
Sorry if this is triggering to anyone listening,
yeah,
by the
yeah,
way,
yeah.
You know, cause it's a sensitive topic.
Yeah.
I have also had the thought, I mean, I don't mean to interrupt you for too long.
Yeah,
just the thought of what does it mean that in order to be myself, I am taking something.
Yeah.
You know. But then that's when the societal analysis piece of it is really helpful because
yeah.
it's like, oh, well, actually, what I think, you know, currently working off of my experience, what I think is my truest experience of myself is actually hindered and, There are many obstacles in the way of having that experience that have been placed in front of me by circumstance, by
yeah.
society, right? And then there's lots of privileges. The fact that I can even have this conversation, you
yeah.
know, means that I have more room to explore this
yeah.
who am I thing than people who have more obstacles in front of them than I've had, right? But that has helped me feel like, oh, I'm going to use every tool possible because when you start looking at the sheer magnitude of what we're up against, you know, like what, like the gender binary is something that like you can't, I mean, just even talking about it the way we are right now is like, there are so many people who just don't get what we're saying right now. Do you
yeah.
know what I mean? Like, I'm sure it's not among the people listening to the podcast, but it's just sort of like, as somebody who teaches people about these things, right? If people can't understand, for example, binary trans people or people who identify as men and women who happen to not be assigned boy or girl, man or woman when they were born, if they can't understand that, they definitely can't even take a step towards what does it mean to not feel like or identify as a man
mm-hmm.
or a woman, right? When you said you don't use the word, like, I identify as, or the,
yeah.
the phrase, I also don't, I'm realizing. I say, sometimes I feel like this, sometimes I feel like that. What I do know is that when this word is used for me, often it causes me to recoil or to feel,
yeah.
you know, like this isn't right.
Yeah.
But coming back, oh my God, I have gone far away again. Sorry.
No, you're fine. This is all, I'm tracking with all of this.
You are. Where did I pick up, though, what you said? Man. Oh, you were talking about HRT, medication, of the people who are like, you know, don't take any of it, the people who are like, you know, we're going to do it all out and pass.
Yeah.
And then the in-between question of like, well, and you know, in my experience with people that I've witnessed exploring this topic for themselves and for myself personally
yeah.
thinking about it, I think that more people land in the middle somewhere than not.
That's my experience of talking with folks that
yeah.
like, especially,
they're just less visible. I mean,
yeah.
you know, like, or less like, because these conversations aren't happening. Because when somebody has done a lot and put a lot of effort into their presentation and it's apparent that they've done that, or it's so not apparent because they pass and then you find out that they're trans, or they tell you, I hate the term, like, you find out, but you know, you become aware. It's just a matter of, it's like in politics, like the middle ground people, there's actually more of them than the extremes, but we hear more from the extremes, right?
Yeah. And then, but, you know, one of the things that I'm, like, very keenly aware of being even able to have this conversation, is that a lot of it stems from the fact that, like, I do own my own business.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, while I still do work for other people, like, primarily I'm just working for myself.
Yeah.
And, like, but there still is that, is just holding this, like, big deal, no big deal. In either direction.
Yeah.
Like,
I really care, I really don't care.
Yeah, like, it's just like, okay, like, and you know, especially when that stuff is, like, when that conversation is, like, spiraling around in my head, like, if it is, like, hard to get in front of a classroom and be like,
oh,
it's hard.
Where everyone's looking at you?
Yeah, it's hard.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like, woe is me, but, like, because I get through it, obviously, like,
But it's an experience you're having, you're talking about it, that's fine, I also feel like adding in, from my experience, again, there may be many people who disagree with me, but that being trans feminine in any way, that being a person who was assigned and is perceived to be male, and then traveling any distance away from that, so to speak, in the opposite direction, but, you know, whatever, to speak simply about it in the other direction. I think that there's a certain anxiety or a certain vulnerability to that I, as a person who was assigned female at birth and who still largely, not largely, I shouldn't say largely, but who does not reject the identity of woman.
Yeah.
It's not like there are people who say, I am not a woman, and I can't say that with truth, totally.
Yeah.
But I also feel limited by, because of my family and because of my cultural upbringing, that, you know, the culture I come from is extremely, very gendered, that everything's very, you know, and so, realizing that a lot of the ways in which we choose to talk about ourselves is a response to the ways in which we were limited when we were young, right? And kind of reclaiming that fuller sense of ourselves that was stamped out or just really, like, not allowed to flourish, not allowed to be seen. That anyway, all that to say that in my perception, it's a little harder socially and in the world to be trans feminine than to be trans masculine, because we live in a world where masculinity is, you know, on a higher, it's on a pedestal. So,
I mean, you know, obviously everyone's experience
is different,
but
totally. Not to minimize any trans masculine folks' experiences, right? Like, at all. In my experience personally, right, when I listen to you talk about your experience and I compare it with mine, I definitely feel less tension about being in front of a room. Also, just historically, I mean, in our culture, it's okay for people who look like women to behave in a masculine manner, like, in you know, especially in a yoga setting, that's totally fine, right? There's no boardroom, there's no, like, you know. So, my point is that I hear what you're saying about your experience and like, witnessing it as harder, as different, as a separate kind of challenge.
And then, there is also part of me that, like, especially in regards to, like, having to, you know, have my own website and having to, like, be on other people's websites, that's just like, okay, whatever, like, who the fuck cares? Mm-hmm. Like, and at the same time, you know, have had experiences now, not a lot of them, but a few of them, like, both professionally and, like, socially, of, like, people seeing, you know, my website or someone else's website with, like, an old photo and then, like,
mm-hmm.
walk into the studio and, like,
yeah,
look at me in a mildly confused way, which is so funny because, like, my hair is longer, and I shave more often.
Who are you?
Like,
well, this is not what I signed up for.
So, like, some of it is, like, really silly. Like,
yeah, it is.
It's just very, very silly.
Well, and you can I
yes.
say more things about
yes.
your appearance right now?
Yeah.
Is it okay with you if
yes.
I describe
yeah.
certain things? Yeah, so, like, you have pierced ears now.
Yeah.
Right? Your nails are, like, beautiful. Beautifully manicured and polished. I'm jelly. And those are markers in our culture, right?
Yeah,
they're
yeah.
markers that are flagged as, or whatever, that's seen as, oh, that's feminine.
Yeah.
Oh, that's feminine. Oh,
yeah.
that's feminine. Which sucks, because, like, fuck you with
yeah.
that. But, like, also, it's real that that's what happens, right?
Yeah.
And so, I can understand why people are like, what?
Yeah.
And at the same time, can we please just move through this? Can
yeah.
we just get to a point where whether your nails are painted or not does,
yes.
not, does
yeah.
not suddenly make a person think that they know, like, so much about you? Because
yeah.
they don't, right?
Yeah.
It's just nail polish.
And well, and that's the really tricky thing, too, is, like, there is a... You know, I don't really know how to phrase this, like, there's a, well, I guess it just comes down to, like, I don't, generally folks... how do I say this? The binary is more pervasive than a lot of folks think. And still to me sometimes when I realize that, like, either something that I'm saying or the way that I'm, like, reacting to somebody or the way I'm, like, fuck you, Ryan. That's like it,
yeah.
it's ingrained.
It's not like it's had thousands of years
yeah.
to establish itself as, like, the most
yeah.
important construct in our
yes.
in human life.
for
most civilizations.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so it can be I don't know, it's just one of those things that, like, once I actually began to, like, pull the blinders off a little bit,
yep.
and it's just like, what the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
And even with other queer folks, like, sometimes, like, that is, like, the most... Because we live in Massachusetts and everyone tries to be a really good liberal, like...
Yeah. So, we're the best white people in Massachusetts.
Yes.
We're the best cis people here. I say we, because
yeah.
I look white, even though I'm not. But yeah.
So sometimes it's just like... sometimes it's with other... maybe queer is the wrong word. But with other gay people that there
mm-hmm.
is, like, the most amount of policing.
Mm.
Because there's a little bit of, like...
Yeah.
Put that back in the box.
Yeah.
Like, we're not in P-Town.
Oh, my God. I have that experience with behaviors and performance presentation that is red as white. Like, mm-hmm. in my family, there's the most policing of my body hair. In my family, there's the most policing of the clothing choices and the hair choices that I'm making. I mean, like, for my head. You know, like it's like... Because these systems, I mean, it's adaptive for a marginalized community to try and assimilate to survive.
Yeah.
And then it's, like, the work that I feel both of us are in the cohort of people who are doing, which is, like, pushing the limit, but expanding the notion of, well, we're not just surviving. We actually have some room here to, you know, evolve beyond the needs of survival mode, right?
Yeah.
And that's such a gift, right? That we get to do that. But I feel you on the, like, it's the community itself that polices the most, the things that, you know, because there's so much pain there, right? It's a point of pain for the community, right? There's so many brown people that I know who have painful experiences with being not white enough or not behaving white enough. There's so many gay people I know who've had painful experiences with not being masculine enough, presenting masculine enough. My own experiences of not being, like, girly enough or ladylike enough or whatever the fuck, you know? And so I think that creates, cause like, we're experiencing it as a community, but there's individual differences obviously, right? So many. And it can be difficult to be like, we need to band together as a community and have like messaging and have each other's backs against the world, like the rest of the systems we're pushing against.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, we are a product of those systems and have internalized them and play them out, right?
In very unique ways. Right. Yeah.
And that's where yoga helps too, right? Yes. It's like, I can at least see what I'm doing, maybe.
Yes.
A little more clarity.
And then it's, you know, there's also the, like, I don't, you know, whatever choices I make, whatever way that I choose to present myself, like, there's always some thread of, like, okay, so I'm going along in this yoga culture, and, like, in an ideal world, I could just evolve how I'm going to evolve and, like, not really have to say anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's true. Like, maybe I can do that. But it doesn't feel like
It's an option.
Yeah.
But for you, it seems like you just said it doesn't feel like an option.
Yeah.
It's not your...
And I don't think that that's anything that necessarily anyone's doing explicit. Like, it's not to, like, point blame. It's just to be like, I've been doing this for a really long time. People have yogic teaching.
Mm-hmm.
People perceive me in a certain way. And I think particularly when I get up in front of the classroom, I do a little bit more of a performance of masculinity, at least a sort of like intellectualized, at least from an intellectual point of view.
Sure.
Maybe that's not the right way to phrase that, but you know what I'm talking
about. I think I do. Yeah. But I have a side question about that, but continue what you're saying. Yeah.
So, it's, it's just this big unknown of, like, because also, like, there is part of me that feels like I should be able to talk about this within the context of yoga, because that's distinctly missing. Like, conversations of sexuality and gender are distinctly missing from yoga discourse.
People love talking about pelvic floor, though.
They do, except for people who are assigned males pelvic floor.
Oh, interesting. Really?
Yeah, I've only had one teacher ever talk, like, specifically about my pelvic floor in relation to like the same
your
way
body
that
parts.
My body parts in the same way that they would speak to someone with
sure.
with a vagina.
Yeah, and there's a whole you're right, yeah. of course. There's like a whole industry of like, you know, prenatal, postnatal, like
yeah.
all this stuff related to reproduction that
yeah.
is
I also, side note, find it really like I understand it, but find it really stupid that a lot of those workshops that and trainings that deal distinctly with the issues that people who have pregnancy and have pelvic floor disorders separate from pregnancy and like how to work with that within the context of yoga, almost all 100% of the time people who are assigned male at birth are not allowed.
Are not allowed.
And it's like, okay,
yep.
except who's 90% of
yep.
who I teach?
Yep. Yep. And it's literally like in sex ed where people, there are still places where it's segregated. It's
yeah,
gender
yeah.
segregated along the binary, and it's like boys don't need to learn about periods. And it's just
yeah,
like,
yeah.
why not, though? In fact, on that note, last Sunday, I took Fez's class. I went and practiced. And I was on my period. It was like a very heavy day. It was like a
yeah,
first
yeah.
or second day, heavy day. And right in the middle, I had to go tend to the fact that my body was like bleeding.
Yeah.
And so I just like hopped out of the room at like a transition moment and, you know, went to the bathroom and came back and I mean, we're friends, so
yeah.
so I could sense that he's like aware that I did
yeah,
this
yeah, yeah.
and is wondering why I might have done this. And in my mind I'm like, whatever, you know, I'm gonna go
yeah.
back to like engaging with what we're doing here. And then there came a series of things leading up to like a shoulder standy type
yeah.
situation. And that's like one of my least favorite poses anyway. And so there's that. And then also I do not personally subscribe to like rules when it comes to like when I'm on my period, I will not do this or I will not, you know, I don't have personal rules like that around my practice. I do what feels useful in the moment.
Yeah.
And in that moment, it felt useful to firstly not engage in my least favorite pose because I was just feeling a mental harshness towards myself
yeah.
about the whole thing. And I was like, well, this is clearly not the point. And then the other thing is the thing about like, my body's doing a thing in another direction and it just feels weird to go upside down right now. So many arguments or conversations can happen on this topic. And
yeah.
I completely understand that like apana goes in that direction and that actually going upside down could increase that downward flow, blah, blah, blah. The point
yeah.
is in that moment, I didn't feel like it. So I didn't, right.
Yeah.
I just made another choice. And after class, Fez was like looking at me like, what happened, you know? And he was actually, it was hilarious. He was standing outside and we were talking through the window screen
yeah.
because he was leaving. And I was like, oh, I'm just on my period. And he was just like, oh, oh, wow. Thanks for telling me. I'm glad you told me. And then we had like a text conversation
yeah, yeah.
and he was saying exactly what you're saying, which is, you know, he's like, he expressed a desire to, and maybe you should talk to him about
yeah,
this,
yeah.
obviously, like, I don't want to take over his,
yeah.
his, you know, but the point was that there was this desire to attend to this topic more, right? Like,
yeah, yeah.
why don't we? And he was like, yeah, it's amazing how I don't think about students in the room or people and the fact that they could be menstruating, right? Just doesn't
yeah.
cross his mind on the regular. And so, and what you're saying is one of the reasons, right?
Because yes.
we tend to, like, block
yes.
Certain people out of those conversations.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I, we hosted a few of those when I worked at Back Bay, and I actually had conversations with the teachers who were doing that, and they were all, like, very adamant that, like, no. And I was like, okay, I could get that from, like, just to, like, everyone feeling safe within the container to talk about.
Yeah, yeah.
Things
like absolutely.
That. I totally
yeah.
get that point. But then, like, you should
also have
then also
programming,
have
yeah.
programming that
is mixed.
Addresses it in a more, especially if it's a teacher training.
That's right. I agree.
Like, if you're framing it as a teacher training,
yeah.
then, like,
yeah. Yeah.
There are yoga teachers that don't menstruate. It would be help and that
yeah.
can't get pregnant.
So to have empathy for those experiences is useful, right?
Yes, exactly.
And also, you know, it's a great microcosm, I think, of the reality that I don't know what's happening with anyone, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Like
yeah,
it's
yeah.
like menstruation is, yes, it's like something
yeah.
that like a large chunk of the population definitely is experiencing, but there's also like all kinds of other experiences people are having in their yeah. lives that have a similar effect, right? They might make that person make a different choice in that moment that's yeah. right for them. And I have to either trust that they're making that choice intentionally and leave them be, right? Which yeah. is my MO actually is more in terms of that. And if I'm not sure if somebody's just not hearing me right, or if I'm not explaining yeah. it right, I'll just repeat and I'll ask for clarification. And if the person continues doing what they're doing, I just assume like, okay, like that's,
they're taking care of themselves.
This is their life. Yeah, I'm not their keeper, right? Like,
yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, more period talk, more body differences talk
yes.
in general of all kinds.
Of all kinds.
In yoga, please.
I don't know where.
We are off the board, folks.
Off the board.
We are not on the board.
We have veered far, far from the board.
This is how our conversations always are, though.
Yeah, exactly. So it's perfect. But I think also, you know, just to get, you know, I think one thing that because I'm sure that there is some yoga teacher somewhere listening to this with the thought of like, oh, what should I do? I want to make it better. Like, what should I do in terms of gender and like,
yeah.
And you know, I appreciate that. And I think like the thing to do, and I do this as well, is to notice how much of the yoga discourse, both the discourse that you're saying in front of the room and the discourse that's happening at large, is revolving around gender. Mm-hmm. And sometimes for good reason and sometimes for mm-hmm. silly reasons or unexamined reasons, I should
ask
say.
What's the reason?
Yeah,
maybe.
Like what's the reason? Like mm-hmm. one thing that I think I've said this many times before on the podcast, is just in the discussion of anatomy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people will make these sort of broad sweeping generalizations about a a person assigned female at birth has this type of pelvis, and a person that is assigned male at birth has this type of pelvis.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is if you actually...
The two pelvises.
If you actually look, there's wide variability.
Yeah.
And, like, you can't tell by looking at someone what they were assigned at birth necessarily, but you can ask people to feel that their pelvis is a particular width and a particular height.
Mm-hmm.
And that information might be interesting or useful in just,
yeah,
you know, particularly the first time I felt how little space there is between the top of the pelvis and the top of my pelvis and the bottom of my ribs.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, that's why. Like, it just made sense. And the first time I felt how like tall the sacrum is, because pelvis is tall, on my body, and like how everyone, when they were palpating, was actually going way, way, way too low.
Too low.
Like, it made a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that wasn't...
Like palpating your SI. You mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that wasn't a gendered conversation. It was a, I have a body.
Yeah.
I have bones. Here's where the bones are.
Right. Yeah, I think you're speaking to something that makes so much sense to me, right? That, like, it. I think the bottom line is you're speaking about being aware of when our binary training
yes.
Starts to overlay and show up inside of the way that, you're considering a body.
Yeah.
That's basically it.
Yeah. So we've got folks coming in for class, so we're going to have to wrap up for today. Yeah, we could go on for like...
Ugh, these people here to do yoga.
We could go on for hours and hours and hours and hours. So... but we've already been going on for like an hour 45, so we should probably.
Oh wow! I always love talking with you, Ryan.
Thank you for those of you that made it this far. And I hope some of you have like a really long commute that you can like get through the whole
road trip.
We will be back in 2 weeks. with an episode with Kate and I, and we'll continue to like rotate more folks in, me and other teachers here at Bow, Kate and other teachers, and then eventually just two other people that are not me or Kate.
What?
Like, don't worry, it'll be okay. But that's how we'll continue going forward. And I will send out to everybody who has supported us in the past information once the new online portal is set up so that you can help support this, so we can pay everybody that contributes to the podcast at least a little bit of something. That is my hope and goal. So I appreciate all of you who do choose to support once I get all of the technical side of that up and running on my website. So thank you in advance. And as always, you can send us questions, comments, concerns to unrolledpodcast@gmail.com. Do you want to say anything to close out?
Well, I'm familiar with the traditional closeout.
Oh, you are? Should we do the traditional closeout? Yeah. Okay, I think so.
Bye!